From KXJZ in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Jeffrey Callison. A top Celtic fiddler is touring Northern California this week. Jamie Laval is an American who lives in Seattle, but he's making an impact in the old country. For starters, he won the 2002 Scottish National Fiddle Championship. But there's a modern flavor to Jamie Laval's playing, which you can hear on his CD Shades of Green. He's also worked outside of the Celtic mainstream, playing with, among others, Dave Matthews. Jamie Laval is also the soloist on the theme tune to the TV drama Evergreen. Touring with Jamie is guitarist Hans York, who also played on Shades of Green. They're my guests today, and I'm pleased to say they've brought their instruments. Let's start with music. Here's Jamie Laval and Hans York with The Straw Man. Thank you so much. That's fiddler Jamie Laval and guitarist Hans York. They're my guests today. They're touring in this area. They're playing in Berkeley on Friday evening, the Sutter Creek Theatre on Saturday evening, and a house concert in Grass Valley on Sunday afternoon. Jamie and Hans, thank you very much for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
That was The Straw Man. It was a reel, I understand. What makes that a reel? What distinguishes a reel from other kinds of music?
It's faster, for one thing. It kind of has a little bit of a backbeat on it, which is kind of appeals to the younger set as well, who, you know, kind of are used to that heavy backbeat in rock and roll. Of course, even Beethoven knew about backbeat, so that's nothing new. But it's a very fast tempo, and it has a lot of lift to the tempo, so it's popular for dancers, especially, you know, in the old times when dancing was one of the only forms of recreation. And I've heard it likened to galloping, just because it just kind of has a really linear feel to it. It just moves really rapidly.
Yes. Yeah, I can hear that. That's Jamie Laval, the fiddler. You're a fiddler. Your instrument looks a lot like a violin. What's the difference between a fiddler and a violinist?
I used to. I haven't said this for years, but I'm going to say it again now because I don't. That nobody ever got shot for violining around with another man's wife. But I know that's but anyway, there is no difference. And it's a popular question. I lament the fact that there are even two words for it.
Really?
For it, because in fact, in French, there's just one word. And really, the instrument is the same. Of course, the tunes are different. And in fiddle music, one tends to try to get a groove, you know, because it's primarily dance music. And that would be the characteristic that's different from classical music. Is with classical, it's all about rubato and freedom. And you don't want to refer too closely to the to the actual time that you're setting down.
I understood about the distinction or the lack of distinction between the two, but still, do you describe yourself as a fiddler or a violinist?
Well, that's been a little bit of a problem, actually, because people have their stereotypes in their mind. And so I finally just decided to say both. I'm a violinist fiddler, because there's just no way around that in this language.
When did you start playing the violin?
I started relatively late. I played other instruments before. I played guitar, clarinet, French horn, piano, etc. And then when I was in high school, it's basically when I picked up a violin. It was my little sister's half-size violin. She was taking Suzuki violin lessons. And so I was definitely a late starter, but I right away from the get-go was practicing 2 or 3 hours a day, and then after 2 years, quit high school a little early and went up to music conservatory, and by that time I was playing 7 hours a day, and so I tried to make up for lost time.
Were you starting with classical music or traditional music?
Classical. I had never heard at that point traditional. I had heard a little bit of like Dixieland jazz and I don't know, just the kind of the pop songs of the day, but that didn't really seem relevant to the violin. And so all I really knew that violinists did was play classical. And so that's kind of what I did for the first few years until I just stumbled into a Grange Hall dance and was exposed to, you know, fiddle music.
And do you still play classical violin?
No. For a while there was a ramp out of classical while I was starting to get busier and busier with fiddle, but the sounds are so different. I could do it if I had to. I'd probably have to practice for about 2 years on classical to get my sound back, but I did try for a while to keep the two going, and it just didn't make any sense because the sound is so different.
Yeah. I'm talking with Celtic fiddler Jamie Laval. Do you think you're a different traditional violinist because you had so much of a foundation in classical, or have you completely departed from that?
I love that question, actually. It's a little bit difficult to answer in that it goes into several layers. I definitely have stripped out much of my classical training, and that was one of the features that people often remark, wow, it's interesting because you don't sound like a classical violinist playing fiddle music, and yet I can tell that there's some kind of training there because, like, you're more in tune than most fiddlers, and I do kind of care about the actual tone production. But I had to strip out a lot of the in some ways, brainwashing that I got from my classical training, and a lot of that was just in terms of rhythm. I mean, in fiddle music, it's more of a body type of rhythm rather than an intellectual rhythm, and so that was, I really had to kind of rethink that and kind of bring it into my whole body operation, you know, over time. It took quite a bit of effort, actually.
Is part of that the difference between playing in an orchestra and playing in a more informal band or a duet?
Definitely. When you're in an orchestra, you kind of have to, even if you had a sense of rhythm and time, you have to just forfeit that completely to the whims of the conductor. And so I remember, you know, and I got actually fairly high in the classical world. I was playing in fairly major orchestras and whatnot. And I remember noticing a point where I was starting to get better and better known in the fiddle world. And then I'd still be sitting there in the orchestra. And I recognized in myself that every single note I was playing had a question mark about it. You couldn't just, like, charge ahead, you know, headlong, because it's all about blend. And so you can't just resort to your own natural instincts. You must follow, you know, the master, the conductor. And so you do that for enough years, you kind of forget what the rhythm is coming up from the earth through your feet and through your whole body. And even if you started out with a sense of that body movement and rhythm, it over time is just completely shoved aside because of the need to blend.
What's your background? Do you have Scottish or Irish blood?
Well, my mother was pure MacGregor, and then my dad was mostly Irish, some Welsh in there, and then there's a little French-Canadian as well. But I guess I feel kind of most closely connected in a kinship way with the Scots.
I guess your answer to the question I was going to say, are you connected to that part of you beyond the music?
Highly possible, although it gets into kind of that esoteric realm. You know, I've heard people talk about going back to the old country and stepping off the plane into Scotland in the airport and just realizing, gosh, I'm home. You know, they feel this kind of this pull to their roots. And there very well could be something there. I can't discount that at all. It's esoteric enough that I can't definitely say, oh, well, because we had so many Gaelic speakers in my upbringing or whatever. And so there was nothing that direct.
Was traditional music played in your house?
No, unfortunately. I never even heard a riff of fiddle music until, as I said, I went out to the Grange Hall dances in the Rocky Mountains of Alberta. And but it's interesting that it resonated with me so instantly. I mean, from the very first strain I heard, I kind of was drawn to that stuff. So I would kind of consider that there may be something genealogically significant about that.
That's fiddler Jamie Laval. Also with us is guitarist Hans York. Hans, I know you're a versatile musician. What kind of music did you grow up playing?
I grew up basically playing rock and roll, and my uncle is a jazz piano player, so he introduced me very early to Miles Davis and Bill Evans and John Coltrane, so I finally gave up the rock and went more towards jazz music.
This was as a guitarist?
That was as a guitarist, yeah. Later on, as a bass player, I did both. I played for years bass with different things, played West Side Story and all kinds of music.
You grew up in Germany. When did you first start playing this kind of music?
Actually, I started in Germany with that. I played with a Celtic harp player, Rüdiger Oppermann. He's fairly known in Europe and lives right now in France. And we had we recorded several albums, and we had a live TV show in Ireland in an old castle where we produced. And so I got introduced to that kind of music fairly early.
What's the role of the guitar in Celtic music?
Well,
how have you defined it?
I try to, because I'm not particularly a traditional player. It's hard to be like German and a traditional player of any kind. But I try to, to honor the tradition, certainly. But I also try to break free a little bit and to give the guitar sometimes the role of a lead instrument as well. Or to use it almost in the classical sense of like incorporating second melodies or counter melodies that, you know, add a little more color to it than the typical backbeat that's there. And then I try to use sometimes different chords that give it a slight different notion.
It does indeed, and we'll talk more about this later. Let's have another live piece. Here's an Irish jig. It's called The Golden Ring, and my guests are fiddler Jamie Laval and guitarist Hans York. Thank you. Terrific. That was an Irish jig, The Gold Ring, and this is Insight from KXJC. My guests are musicians Jamie Laval and Hans York. Jamie's a Celtic fiddler, Hans is a guitarist, and they're on tour in Northern California this week. We'll be right back with more conversation and live music.
Support for the KXJZ stations is provided by your contributions and by members of the Leadership Circle, including Michael and Rebecca Moore and Dr. Thomas and Elizabeth Atkins. For more information about becoming a Leadership Circle member, call 916-278-8944.
This is Insight from KXJZ. I'm Jeffrey Callison. You can listen to today's show and any other Insight Archive program on our website. Go to capradio.org/insight. Celtic fiddler Jamie Laval is touring Northern California with guitarist Hans York. They're my guests today, and they brought their instruments. We're listening to a track from the CD Shades of Green by Jamie Laval. Jamie, what piece is this?
This is called, this is actually Ronds, which is, it's called Danse Rustique, but it's actually set dances from Brittany, which is the western part of France, and it's kind of a, it's distinctly different from the other Celtic disciplines. I mean, if you think of maybe approximately five strains, you know, there's the Irish and the Scottish and the Cape Breton and the then Brittany and then Quebecois. And so the Brittany music is decidedly kind of Eastern flavor. And so that's a kind of a fascination to me to investigate that.
Yes, it does have an Eastern sound to it. Any idea why that is the case with something from Western France?
Yeah, a couple of things. They love minor keys, obviously. And the note collections of their melodies is limited to just like four or five notes. They just don't play the full range of the scale, largely because of the instruments they were using. They were using the bombard and the biniou. And so with these limited numbers of notes, they kind of twist and turn the notes upside down and make the phrases irregular. And so you don't have wide jumps in the melody. It's just all kind of like squirrely and twisty, and it gives a kind of a trancey quality that's rather hypnotic. I find it rather fascinating, actually.
That's fiddler Jamie Laval. Well, those are some of the characteristics of Breton music. What about Scottish and Irish music? I think it's safe to say that a lot of people here, anyway, think it's pretty much the same thing. Are they the same thing, or could you tell the difference between a Scottish piece and an Irish piece that you didn't know?
It's largely interpretive nowadays, so it could be easily imaginable that an Irish player could play a Scottish tune and play it in the style that they know, and it would be indistinguishable. It would simply sound Irish. you know, and conversely for any of the other strains. But if you really try to examine what it is about the melodies themselves, apart from the interpretive quality, I've been pretty good about being able to identify readily differences. I mentioned one about the Breton melodies, a limited note collection, and fits handily on the bombard, the instrument, whereas like the Scottish melodies, for example, are limited to a nine-note collection because the bagpipes can only play nine notes. And so that interesting limitation creates a kind of a modal harmony, which is sort of haunting and kind of evocative of the wide open landscape there.
So the pipes are the foundation of Scottish traditional music.
I think of it that way. Obviously, violins and drums and the voice was around, you know, for a long time as well. But the construction of the melodies was so, it fits on the bagpipes. A lot of the other instruments were actually imitating the bagpipe sound because the bagpipe seemed to be the granddaddy of them all.
And speaking of the pipes, the piece that you played before our break, The Gold Ring, the Irish Jig, Hans York, the way you were playing in the first half, it for me sounded a bit like the drone of a bagpipe. You had this repeated note playing in the guitar. Is that deliberate?
That's an interesting thing. I never thought about it like that. But it's right. It gives a drone that bagpipes usually add to that. In that particular part, I tried to mimic a little bit Laboron, like the drum, kind of that thing with a muted sound. And if you hit the skin of a Boron, you get kind of this muted thing.
And as the piece progressed, the guitar and the violin were weaving in and out of each other. And you talked earlier, Hans, about your interest in making the guitar work a bit differently in Celtic music. Is that why you work together? Because you bring something similar? Is that correct? Is that fair?
Well, you know, we have a lot of things in common that make things work out very well. But I think the mutual interest in one another is also like the differences that, you know, we have different approaches to things, and kind of that's sometimes Jamie comes up with something, I think, wow, I've never thought about it like that. That's interesting. I try it out, and it's the other way around. So it works pretty well.
And it helps that you both live in Seattle too, I guess.
It helps, though it's not crucial anymore because we spend a lot of time together on tour. And so wherever one lives, we kind of manage, I hope.
We'll see how that goes.
Jamie, what do you think of the word Celtic when applied to music? I know that it's the simplest term from a marketing point of view, but does it have much meaning? Or is it too much of a catch-all term for too many different kinds of music?
It's getting to be that ever since Riverdance is a catch-all. And so you see it like applied to, products in Target even have the word Celtic. What? I see these like really cheapo CD knockoffs that are like synthesized, I don't know, this horrible sound. And I don't know, it's just, Celtic, it's the new fad. Oh, it must be good if it's Celtic. And Enya, I think, I like Enya's music, don't get me wrong, but I think that kind of brought a more accessible approach to Celtic, where people that wouldn't normally listen to folk music would listen to Enya because it's like highly processed and produced and that. And but she does Celtic music. So all of a sudden now Celtic is this generalized word. I'm kind of happy for the term because that allows me not to have to commit. Am I an Irish fiddler or a Scottish fiddler? Or in fact, not a fiddler at all, but a violin. I can just say that I'm a Celtic musician and it's sort of handy.
And people get the picture.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It seems to me that there's sadness in a lot of Scottish and Irish music. Do you find that too?
Oh, absolutely. So maybe that's part of the draw that we were talking about earlier. Like, this is the one kind of music that I like the best. I resonate with this music. I love this music. That's practically all I listen to. And the appeal to me there is it's just so melancholy. And whether that resonates with my own spirit and emotions, I'm not exactly sure. In a way, like when I'm playing, that kind of distant, sad, melancholy pipe music, it's almost like I'm saying those things. It's not a 300-year-old melody anymore. It's actually that I'm making it up brand new for the first time. So it's just kind of a conduit for me to express myself. But it definitely has that air of people that were repressed and murdered and cast out for centuries and centuries, and that sound found its way into their material.
Every country, every group of people has its own traditional music, but Celtic music, Scottish and Irish music specifically, seem to resonate more than the average traditional music. They are fairly successful and well listened to and well liked by people in all around the world. Why is that? Is there something different about Scottish and Irish music compared to other forms of traditional music?
I'm just throwing this out, and then I could go home and reflect on it and come up with a new dissertation.
Let us know
on
what
it,
you think when you've thought about
it. Call in. But part of it is the simplicity. If you take, for example, classical music, the level of sophistication of the harmonic and melodic development material is very, very intricate. And though there are a lot of different simple musics around the world, take the pentatonic music from Asia and so forth. I think that's one of the characteristics of music that speaks directly to the heart is not overly complicated, for one. And then the emotions that it is suggesting by because of like this limited note collection that I was telling you about. There's a kind of a harmonic suggestion there that just sounds, you can hear the emotion from that music. And it's an emotion that I think that a lot of people identify with all over the world. Whereas maybe some of the other folk musics suggest emotions in their own right, but it's not a particular emotion that's as easily understood by other cultures.
Hans York, you've worked in many kinds of music. What's your take on this? Why do you think that Celtic music seems to resonate with many people, many of whom live thousands of miles away from the old country and have no connection to it?
Well, I think that what Jamie said in terms of that the music reflects these emotions of people that suffered, and that it really carries that out, and music, doesn't use words in the most, like this Celtic stuff is mostly instrumental music. And which resonates the loss and the pain of people, and a lot of cultures can just can get that and reflect it and have it basically handy, this feeling handy when they hear that music. I thought about another thing, like if you take for example blues, it's the same thing. It's fairly simple. It's coming from people that are basically oppressed or used to be oppressed and still are to some degree. And it resonates all over the world. I mean, you can play basically blues in the furthest corner of the world, and people say, "Oh, yeah, that's doing something."
And you've worked in the blues. I understand you co-produced an album for Fillmore Slim. It's a sort of funky blues album.
Yeah.
What do you like about the blues?
I love the simplicity of that, and basically just the emotional fact that I can't really control it. I hear it and it's doing something instantly. And I played in Germany back. We were living close to an army base and an Air Force base, actually Rammstein. And there were a lot of, African-American musicians there. And I love to hang out with them and play that kind of music. And for me at that time was a little bit the view from the big world. Coming from a relatively small town in Germany. And so I always kind of resonated with that kind of music.
That's guitarist Hans York. He's touring Northern California this week with fiddler Jamie Laval. Jamie, you said that this kind of music is all that you listen to. What other kinds of music, though, do you like, even if you don't listen to them nearly as much?
I think I may have said just about.
Just about, yeah, sure. Yeah.
But I had a very long and prolonged flirtation with jazz, and I still love it.
As a violinist?
Yes. And so in college, I would just rush off after my classical gig and hang out in the jazz clubs and jam. And so that was prominent. I tended to go for the less boppish of the jazz. So like, I liked Charlie Parker a lot, but I had pretty widespread taste. I always have liked ethnic musics, maybe not so much the pentatonic style, you know, koto and so forth. Although there's usually something there that you can really kind of zone into. So I do appreciate many different kinds of ethnic music. For a while, I was kind of enamored with the gypsy music from the Europeans, the Hungarian particularly. And so, yeah, I do definitely, you know, some of the pop artists are just doing beautiful, wonderful things. I never was too much.
Who do you like?
I like Sting a lot. You know, I like the melodists. So hence that I'm not really big on the heavy metal and the really just the totally hardcore. And actually, to tell you the truth, I quite enjoyed this show that I did at Christmas time with the Trans-Siberian Orchestra with the pyrotechnics and the smoke and lasers.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah, that was great fun.
What did you do with them?
I was just a side musician, and so I sort of did face off with this mega rocker babe on the violin. She had this hot pink violin. She's wonderful, and so we were all getting down and playing all aggressive, and it was great fun. And I got to know several of the bandmates. They had a guitarist from Megadeth, you know, and it was just all in kind of like just a raucous good fun, you know.
I bet. Mm-hmm. I noticed that you also played on Dave Matthews' CD, Some Devil.
Yeah, so that was, again, backing tracks, and it was arranged, so I didn't have to make anything up on the fly. They brought in an arranger from London who was really good and knew orchestral instruments and really knew how to write those arrangements. But it was sort of fun because Dave was there and would discuss the effect that he was going. A lot of times he didn't even have his melody, his vocal line actually dropped in, or he had parts of it dropped in, but without any lyrics. He would just sing "Yubi Dubi Dubi" and then drop out again. Meanwhile, then we'd be playing these various backing tracks. And so then he would sometimes stop and just say, "Well, see, the mood of the song is suggesting this and that and the other thing. So when you play that riff, can you make it, you know, more aggressive or smoother or something like that?" And then we'd work with it. And so I actually never really heard the final result until, you know, some months later when the album was released.
Did they want you to do this because you're a Celtic fiddler or because you're a violinist and therefore you could do violin things?
In that case, it was because I was a violinist. The person that actually called wasn't Dave Matthews himself, but a music contractor whom I've been working for several years. And so I have gotten calls that were specifically to do a Celtic solo, and I've gotten other calls because they just need a nice, sweet, smooth backing line, and other calls from the same contractor that, like for the Trans-Siberian Orchestra, for example, that was neither of those reasons. It was just because he knew that I wouldn't have, you know, a mind having all the smoke, you know, up my backside and with the pyrotechnics and the sparkles and everything like that. Whereas some violinist types might have a attitude about that. And so reasons, I guess.
This is Celtic fiddler Jamie Laval. Earlier on the show, I misstated something that you do, which is kind of high profile. You're the soloist on the theme to Everwood, which is a Monday night family drama on the WB. I listened to it. It's sort of a Celtic-y kind of sound. Is that part of what you were talking about earlier, of Celtic as an ambience rather than a specific kind of music?
Absolutely. In fact, when I got the call, he said, "Yeah, well, we need a Celtic fiddler that basically sounds really smooth and in tune, and there's only one person that we know of that fits that bill. So come on down
Call
to the
Jamie.
Studio." Yeah, yeah. And so I thought I was actually going to be playing Celtic music, which that wasn't anything. To me, I don't really hear that that's Celtic, but what the composer did say was, "Now, I'm kind of thinking of a high Rocky Mountain kind of sound, you know," and hence he put me up in a ridiculously high register that fiddlers would never play in. I mean, it would be a disaster if they had actually called a fiddler, because it was like way up there on the top string. And so fortunately, that worked out okay, but he did kind of once in a while make suggestions like, "Well, can you throw in one of those wiggly three-billy-tees things that you do?" You know, meaning like the ornaments that where you flick around fingers,
thing.
You know, because we have a lot of wiggly notes, basically. And so, okay, well, I guess he wants me to throw in a wiggly note so that it'll sound more Celtic-y. But essentially, I didn't see that was Celtic music at all.
Well, again, that's the theme to Everwood, which is Monday nights on the WB. When you hear the theme tune, that's the soloist is Jamie Laval, who, along with Hans York, is my guest. Time for another live track. Here's the Royal Scottish Pipers Society. This is a march performed by Jamie Laval and Hans York. This is Insight from KXJZ. I'm Jeffrey Callison. My guests today are musicians Jamie Laval and Hans York. Jamie's a Celtic fiddler. He's playing right now. Hans is a guitarist. They're on tour in Northern California this week. They play Berkeley tomorrow, Friday evening, Sutter Creek on Saturday, and Grass Valley on Sunday. If you go to jamielaval.com, you'll find more information about those dates. Jamie, tell us, what are you playing? This is a different violin, right?
Yeah, and I was just goofing around a little bit.
that's okay.
Just trying out some of the bagpipey ornaments that I play. You see, I have an unusual tuning here, and I also kind of play quivery, quick little ornaments, and this is all a technique of trying to imitate a bagpipe sound.
And what makes that violin closer to a bagpipe sound? Is there something inherent in the violin, or is it just the tuning?
Exactly the same violin, although every violin sounds slightly different. So I chose, in this case, this violin had a kind of a hoarser, brighter sound, and so that one made more sense, just for my tastes, to make it into the bagpipe instrument. But I could have easily done it with the other violin, too. So basically, it's just the tuning of the strings.
Why are you interested in translating, if that's the right word, the bagpipes onto the fiddle?
Very good question. Basically, that music is like so incredibly moving, and I think a lot of people don't give it a fair crack for, considering how special it really is, because they just kind of cringe. They hear that loud thing, and it seems that opinions do definitely divide, because I've known an equal number of people that absolutely adore bagpipes. But I think the thing is converting it to the violin and then adding guitar and working with arrangements helps kind of elevate the emotion that's already there in the music, but it might not be readily apparent. And so I kind of look in this very, very old material. Some of it is 200 or 300 years old, and find things that really are very, very touching and moving, and seek to kind of elevate that emotion that's already inherent in that.
The bagpipes get a bit of a bad rap, though, and people think of them as being loud, which of course they are.
Right, right. The bombard is even louder, though.
Now, speaking of tuning, Hans York, your guitar is tuned a little differently from the way guitars are normally tuned. Yours is, I believe, D-A-D, G-A-D, a bit different. Why do you tune it that way?
It comes basically from an Irish tradition. It's called dadgad. It allows me to play, which part of that Celtic sound sometimes are fifth, you know, like... Or like a full chord which doesn't have a third in it. That would be with a third, and it sounds smoother. And so this is more without the third, and it has just a more open sound to it. And the whole, because some of the strings are double, like you say, you know, D, like the D string appears three times, and two times A, and one time just G. So it's the guitar resonates and rings way more than it would in normal tuning.
Is it harder or easier to play with that kind of tuning?
It depends on... I don't think that it's particularly harder. It's just you have to retrain your brain and your fingers to do things. So most people just use it for an accompaniment and for chordal playing. But, you know, I wanted to also play, incorporate melodies, and so I had to kind of relearn the guitar to some degree.
Jamie, you're touring Scotland later this year. What's it like playing traditional music in the country it comes from?
Well, I was slightly trepidous, to tell you the truth, when we went over there the first time, because if you can imagine, here are three American boys going to Scotland to play Scottish music to the Scots, you know. And much to my considerable delight and surprise, they just absolutely ate it up. And I think it's largely because they were eager to see what could happen with their music as it evolves into the new millennia. So, I think for traditional listeners in this country, there's been more surprise than we encountered over there. There were lots of people that were taking that traditional stuff and giving it a new spin. Of course, we had a different new spin than the other people, but we were welcomed, and it was a great experience.
You've also played for Queen Elizabeth. How did that come about?
She was in Victoria. I was actually studying at the conservatory there. And she was there to open the Commonwealth Games. So I was basically the after-dinner merriment and entertainment. Basically, there was a great big swanky dinner at the Lieutenant Governor's mansion, and all the media was there and everything. And I came... in after the dinner and provided, you know, my blend of
what did you play?
A whole mixture, actually. You know, I just didn't know kind of what would go down the best, so I kind of gave him a pastiche of different styles.
Well, her mother was Scottish anyway, so right. She probably was tapping her toe.
Oh yeah, yeah.
We just have a few minutes left, so we do have time for a quick piece. Can you play something for a couple of minutes?
Sure, maybe we do a Strathspey, which we haven't
done. Excellent.
Yeah. Thank you.
Strathspey, performed by Jamie Laval, fiddler, and guitarist Hans York. What makes a Strathspey a Strathspey?
Oh, choppy stuff. And da-da-da-da. That's a very vigorous stroke, yes. Basically. But at one time, they were called Strathspey reels. And then there was a kind of a separation, so the Strathspeys stayed a little slower and choppier, and reels got faster and smoother.
So the Strathspey became an unreal, I guess.
Yeah.
Now, you're playing several concerts in our area around about now. Could you tell us where you're playing and when between now and Sunday?
Sure. Tomorrow night we're over in Santa Rosa. So this whole trip, of course, is the usual zigzagging all over the place, which is it seems that every tour is this way. So we're going to Santa Rosa and playing in a private home there. This is all on the website, by the way, jamielaval.com. I have to put in that plug. And then on Friday night we're going to Berkeley to play at the Freight and Salvage, favorite spot there, lovely. And then Sutter Creek on Saturday night.
At the Sutter Creek Theater.
Yeah, and wow, what a sweet spot.
Indeed.
They've restored that. That old vaudevillian concert hall is lovely. And then ending up the tour on Sunday in Grass Valley, another private residence there.
These are home concerts. What's it like playing a home concert? Must be intimate.
Yeah, it's great because we don't have to use a PA. And so the acoustic experience is much nicer for the listeners. And it's fun because it's a living room experience. So people really, they see every drop of sweat flying off and they get the full impact of all the vigor there. And spontaneous things break out. You know, people ask questions and if they brought kids make funny remarks. And it's
sounds fun.
Yeah, it's very relaxed.
How many people would be at a home concert?
Typically 40 to 50.
My goodness.
Yeah.
That sounds great. And that's you're doing one of those in Grass Valley. Yeah. You two, Jamie Laval and Hans York, you live in Seattle. Is that a good base for a Celtic musician?
On the road, we always discuss that. So on the way here to the station, we were discussing that very point. I don't know. You had some good thoughts this morning. You know.
Well, I don't know if they were really good because I'm going forth
and
back.
They were thoughts anyway.
Yeah, they were thoughts anyway. Sometimes I think Seattle is really a great place. But in terms of touring, of being a touring musician and making your living with that, Seattle is not necessarily the golden thing. It would be more like San Francisco or different places where, you know, I mean, the next thing after Seattle is Portland, which is more than a 3-hour drive. And then, you know, there's a long time nothing until you come to San Francisco.
Right.
And I'm sure the people of Eugene wouldn't say nothing. You know, but
wait a moment.
Well, you're certainly more than welcome here in Northern California. In fact, we're out of time. So, as we wrap up the show, let's listen to a little bit of music from Shades of Green, which is Jamie Laval's CD. And we're hearing in the background, Long Trip Home. Jamie and Hans, thank you so much for coming in and for being so generous with your music. It was a pleasure to meet you both.
Thanks. We had a good time.
And that's Insight for today with Jamie Laval and Hans York. Coming up on the KXJZ stations, how one Cuban rock musician wound up in prison and why human rights groups think he should be freed. That story and the day's news are next on The World. I'm Jeffrey Callison. Thanks to Paul Conley for his invaluable production assistance on this program. Our associate producer was Catherine Ahn. Insight's technical director is Mark Jones. Our senior producer, Benjamin Jonas Keeling. Thank you very much for joining us. Giving marriage-like benefits to gay couples in California went into effect January 1st. I'm Jeffrey Callison. It's not legal for gays to marry, but some would say the new law enables them to divorce. On the next Insight, we'll unravel the new law and look at the challenges it's sure to face. Join me for Insight.
That's tomorrow afternoon at 2 on the KXJZ stations.